Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And she uses all these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to our conversation. I think that it's an issue that is timely and impacts all of us in some way or another. But it's interesting because it's an issue or topic that hasn't been on my radar for a couple of years. And I was out to dinner with some friends this last weekend and my girlfriend brought it up and I went, oh yeah, I remember feeling like that. Maybe we need to revisit this story.
Okay, so where are we off to today?
All right, so we're going to talk about refeathering the empty nest. And I know you know the term empty nest. You know, it's kind of a colloquialism for and when everyone leaves the house.
Yeah, my parents got a doodle, a dog.
So. Okay, so before I jump into that, I'm so glad you brought that up because I would have forgotten. But I tell my students when we talk about midlife and the empty nest, I say, you'll know your parents are struggling with the empty nest because they will bring in another pet.
And that dog gets more attention than I ever got. They love that dog.
And you know why they love that dog so much? Because when our children leave home and it's left to just the two of you and you look at each other and you realize we have a lot of unfinished business together that we don't want to address. And so you bring in this new little dog and it filters all of those feelings towards this animal and you don't have to deal with them with each other.
The other dogs used to get just regular dog food. This one gets shipped in gourmet.
Blue apron for dogs.
Only the best hair treatments.
It's oh, yeah. And it's real. And your parents are not uncommon. It's a very classic way that couples kind of navigate that shift in their family landscape is by bringing in the beloved pet. So yeah, we're going to talk about that kind of refeathering of the empty nest and what it looks like. And it's interesting because my mother, and she's listening, so she can tell me if I'm right or wrong. But my mother insists that when we all left home, she was giddy, that she was done and ready to move on, couldn't have happened fast enough. And she had all this life that she was looking forward to living. And that was not my experience at all. I went into a deep, deep mourning and depression for 18 months from the time Kelly, my younger daughter, before she even graduated, like the January before she left to go to college, and then for like 18 months, that shocked me because I had this great job, you know, working at Cal Poly and doing the show and friends that I looked forward to reconnecting with. And so the fact that I kind of went into this whole really surprised me. And then, of course, I had to live through it. And so my mom having this completely different experience made me feel like, wow, I just must be, you know, an outlier or having, you know, was too invested in my children, whatever it was. I had a lot of stories as to why I struggled so much. But then, of course, as we do, I started asking all of my friends and anyone who would listen to me, you know, how is this process for you with your children leaving home? And it became really apparent that I wasn't the only one and that in my generation of helicopter parents or incredibly involved parents, you know, a different generation than my own parents had been with our kids, that a lot of women and men, a lot of dads were going through this real sense of loss and grief over their children leaving home. And, you know, Psychology Today has written many articles, and even the Mayo Clinic has a spot on their website that talks about the empty nest syndrome. The empty nest syndrome isn't a clinical disorder. It's not in the DSM. It's not a diagnosis, but it's so prevalent in society that it's been recognized as a transitional period in our lives that is highlighted, can be highlighted by loneliness and loss and grief. And what's interesting is that because loneliness is one of the greatest mental health epidemics we have, it would make sense that going through the empty nest period of time or developing an empty nest syndrome and the loneliness that comes along with it would be something that we would want to pay attention to. Because loneliness can lead to, you know, depression, anxiety, but also health disorders and suicidal ideation. And so there's a lot of risk to that sense of loneliness. And also the more I thought about it, although we are so connected, we can FaceTime our children and text them and, you know, we're more mobile, I can't use the word, we're mobile. We can get from place to place and see each other. We still have a high sense of being alone, that for all of our connectivity, we still feel very alone in our lives. So I was out to dinner with friends on Friday night, and my friend Cora, who her youngest is just getting ready to go off to college, kind of brought this up again. She said, you know, I'm struggling. I was stricken with this grief and sadness that my youngest is leaving. And she says, I never really had any backup plan. Like, this was the thing I was wanted to do. And when she said that, that was it. That was the thing that knocked my knees out from underneath me, is that I also had no backup plan, that all I ever wanted to do since I met my husband was get married and have kids. And because I went from home to college to marriage to baby without any real break, it just kind of all fell into place. And although in the back of my mind somewhere, I knew that they would leave home someday, it never occurred to me that once they left home, I'd still have 30 years to fill of my life. And I hadn't really thought about that. And so my girlfriend was talking about that same piece of this transition and this sense of loss of identity and this very real feeling that the most meaningful thing you'll do in your life has ended. And that's really, that's a strong feeling to sit with. I remember reading this story this woman wrote that really struck me during the empty nest grieving that I was going through. And she said, on parenting, I look back and I remember the long days, the long, long days, and those long days of being low to the floor. And being low to the floor is really the essence of mothering, being literally grounded by your children, but also being the ground for your children. You are their Mother Earth, from where they grow, they learn, they play, and then ultimately they leave once they have taken in all of the necessary resources that you have and prepared them for moving forward. And then you as the mother, I as the mother, am left depleted, exhausted, and exulting in completing the most important thing I'll ever do. So I want to talk about that empty nest feeling. I want my friend Cora to hear other people's experiences of that refeathering of the empty nest, the feelings that go in the sense of loss, but also what can happen, what can come for those next 30 years of your life. And I also want to address it towards men, because there's similar research that showed that men experience the same empty nest feeling when they reach the end of their career, when they're ready to retire, when they're ready to move into what is next for them. And it's hard for men because they have the same, many men will have the same feelings of loss, loneliness, grief, a sense of loss of identity, and yet they're not given the opportunity to talk about it or express those feelings. One, because of our gendered experience that men get to hold things in and women get to talk about it, but also because as men are reaching retirement, everyone around them is throwing parties and saying, you made it, and this is great, and you've got everything to look forward to. And so if you're not feeling those things, then you feel like there's something wrong with you. And so for men and for women, these experiences of loss can come when our children leave home, when our career is coming to an end. And it's not a midlife crisis, because in all honesty, when we hit that career ending part, we're not in midlife any longer. We're actually in that young old stage. And that's a reality check into itself, that it's not midlife. It's the beginning of our old years. And so we spend a lot of time, you know, talking about end-of-life plans and getting our affairs in order and, you know, how will that look at the end of our life. But for those 30 years, we also have to talk about how we live our best life in that period of time. So I have my experience, but I thought that's one side of it. So I'm going to bring in my good friend, Shelley Higginbotham, who is also the former mayor of Pismo Beach. She's the mother of three. And well, not to embarrass you, but she also spearheaded the preservation of Dinosaur Caves Park. She always shakes her head at me. It was so many people, I know, but you were in the midst of bringing that together. And so I wanted Shelley to come in because not only has she experienced the empty nest, but also careers transitioning and changing twice. And I thought she'd bring this great perspective to us today. So thank you for coming in, Shelley.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
So we're going to open up the phone lines in a couple minutes. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can be part of the conversation by calling in. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can check out previous shows at kcbx.org. Podcast our show by visiting Apple Podcasts or however you find podcasts. Hit subscribe and the shows will show up in your device every week. You can follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT, or check us out on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist. However you get involved, we welcome you into the conversation. You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to start our conversation.
You're in the sky. What is love? Can the child within my heart rise above? Can I sail through the changing ocean tides? Can I handle the seasons of my
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And my guest today is Shelley Higginbotham. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, Elizabeth.
All right. So I tried to not pre-warn you too much about the conversation because I didn't want us to have our best conversation, not even here at the studio. But you heard the introduction.
I did. Very well done, by the way.
Thank you. Refeathering that emptiness. And so I don't know where you'd like to start, but you raised three children.
I raised three. I have a daughter and twin boys that are they're 18 months apart, not the twins, obviously. And so they have been out of the house. My daughter graduated high school 10 years ago, and then the boys 8 years ago. And we talked about the emptiness. So when my daughter left for college, I was devastated.
And she's the older.
She's the oldest.
Okay, so it wasn't your last child leaving home.
Nope. I still had my boys, okay, who I absolutely adore. They're extraordinary, but I still, and I had them at home, but there was this grieving we all felt when we drove her down to UCSD. We all cried on the way home. And okay, sorry, boys. And so there was months I would walk my hill thinking, I am not going to get through this. There's this hole. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden March rolled around and she called me and she said, hey, I'm coming up this weekend. And in my head, I said, oh, my gosh, I have plans.
I was too busy for you.
And I said, oh, I'm so excited because in my head, I'm going to change him, of course. But I thought, okay, I'm doing better. I got past this. And she's where she needs to be. And we're all going to survive. And gosh darn it, if we do our job, we launch them and they leave us. And so when it came time for the boys, they went to school locally when it in Santa Barbara, one at Cal Poly. They were closer, never saw them, and I thought, okay, now I can clean up my house and get new carpet. I just got carpet a year ago. It took a little time, but so that's where my head was.
And it's interesting because you touched on, you know, we're excited that our children are leaving home, and I think that's what causes this sense of like mixed feelings. Why would I be grieving? Because I knew they were going to go, and I'm right, thrilled that they're off and healthy and thriving and making choices, and yet mm-hmm, that
and
hole.
It's that hole. I always have told friends that it's so frightening when our children get driver's licenses, but if they begin to drive at 16 or 17, that freedom that they begin to have starts to kind of desensitize you as they begin to leave the house. Yeah. And I think that helps a little bit. Not that you're not anxious when they're out on the road, but for sure, there's definitely a void.
And it was interesting for me because Kelly, my younger daughter, went to school in Chicago. And so not only was I struggling with this is kind of the end of the story that I had for my life, she was in a place where I couldn't access her easily. But as you said, that desensitizing helped because like there was nothing I could do at all right. for her in Chicago. And so I was able to kind of bring myself into the present and get back involved in the things I was doing day to day.
Right. And I was fortunate because as my kids left, I was able to find another path, and that was in politics, which is all consuming and filled up so much of my time that there wasn't quite as much of a void.
Mm. And were you mayor when the boys left?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you had kind of found that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had started my path into politics. And so that helped so much because it's all consuming. Definitely.
So talk about how you even found yourself running for office, because that wasn't something you'd gone to school for. You weren't a poli-sci major, I think. You had studied psychology.
Right. I got my master's in psych, right?
And so how did
then I started having babies.
Yeah. Just when you got this education, right. Which a lot of us do. But how did you find yourself there? Because that's a big leap.
Well, once all of the kids, Aaron was in high school, and then my boys, Casey and Ryan, were in middle school, it's like, okay, now I needed just a little bit more because I had the privilege of staying home.
And I agree. It is a privilege.
Oh, my gosh. And so, but I wanted to get involved and do something. And I had worked with a neighbor to get playground equipment put in our local park. And I really loved that whole process. And I'd been part of the task force for dinosaur caves. And so I signed up to be, or I applied to be on the Parks and Rec Commission for the city of Pismo Beach, which was, you know, one night a month. Mm-hmm. And so that was easy breezy. And then as I got to know some of the elected officials, they encouraged me to run. I'm like, oh, heck no. But then my husband's like, oh, heck yes, this would be great. And so that's
how
I did it.
So what was the process like? Because we've seen in this last election cycle, young women, you know, who ran for Congress who had never had any background but have found themselves in this position. So clearly the message should be, as a common citizen, it is our right to run and
Absolutely.
Express ourselves and participate. So talk a little bit about the actual process, because I'm hoping someone's listening thinking, no, I could never do it.
But oh, could. Oh, I was terrified. Okay. I mean, I go door to door and they'd say, okay, why are you running? And I'd say, oh, because there's a couple council members that told me to.
That's
how
not
lame
a
is that, right? That's not a platform. But I said, hey, I've lived here since 1984. I've raised my kids here. And I really care about the city. And I'm pretty excited. And I'm got a master's degree so I can read, and I'll put in a lot of time, and I'm super energetic, and tell me what you think. Tell me how I could better represent you. How do you feel you're not being heard here in the city? So it was kind of an interesting time. There were five of us running for two seats,
wow.
And the I came in second, and what happened is that was the first year Pismo had an elected mayor. She had a sitting council, existing council seat, so she moved into the mayoral seat, and because I came in second, they appointed me to fill that vacated seat, and the rest is history.
And even to back up further to that, did you have to go to the city hall and you know just grab paperwork? Do you have to get petition signed to put your name on the ballot? I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm really,
sure.
I don't think, because I don't really know the process
mm-hmm.
myself.
It's because we're a small city, and I only know about Pismo Beach, but you go and you get like a petition, and you have to get 20 signatures of registered voters, and the city clerk gives you this whole packet on all the rules, all the campaign rules, and turn in your 20 signatures, and then you qualify for the ballot, and off you go. So then the key to it is going door to door. I mean, you can do mailers and you can do ads, but it's really, especially, I think, in any jurisdiction, it's the door-to-door personal contact with citizens that make the difference, for sure.
So how did you transition through from full-time mom to mayor? What did you learn about yourself?
I got over my fear of public speaking.
Okay.
I am, believe it or not, very shy. A very shy person. And so it was very difficult for me to kind of go into these big social situations. And it helped me transition into that because you had to. And I had to become more organized and read. And my experience as a parent helped me become more patient with some of the people in the public, and maybe a little of the psychology degree helped, and just listening. Because truly, people, citizens really care about their communities. 99.9% do, and they're passionate about it. And if you can get them down to that civil level of discussing what their fear or their concern, you get to the heart of what's going on. And so, yeah.
So in some ways, it was like using the negotiation skills mm-hmm. you have to use with your children.
And listening.
Listening.
And compassion, yeah. for sure.
And so how did your relationship with your husband changed from, you know, your dynamics as parents together to then you moving into a professional career along with his career? Because the empty nest period mm-hmm. for a lot of couples, you know, we joked about getting a pet
right.
to help with that dynamic. But for a lot of couples, it can cause a lot of discord. Either, you know, each individual starts to feel like they have interests outside of the family home mm-hmm. or the couple gets closer or they just kind of drift apart. So how did it impact your relationship?
I think in the beginning it was exciting and new, and I think that I have a very understanding husband because I didn't spend nearly the amount of time with him and on our relationship that I should have because my focus was elsewhere. It just took so much time. And he is so much happier now that I'm home. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. The kids are gone. I don't have that political job anymore. I do some volunteer work, and it has really made a huge difference in the relationship. And my house is cleaner.
Yeah, and you have new carpet.
And I have new carpet.
It's almost as if you delayed kind of that renegotiating of your marriage mm-hmm. for after the time in politics. Mm-hmm. And so we talked also about, or I talked at the beginning of the show also, that there's that transition for men as they move towards the end of a career. But it's same for women. If a career was the, you know, highlight of your life also, or that main focus of your life, that end of the career has that same emptiness feeling of loss of identity and what do I do next? And so I'd imagine that you had it twofold because you went from raising three very active children and then right into politics because you mm-hmm. were there once the kids left, which has got to be all-consuming, as you said. But then that ended.
Right.
So how was that transition?
It took a few months because my daughter graduated from medical school, moved, and got married all within 4 months. So I had now the freedom to be a really active participant in that, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. So I want to say post-marriage, so there was a little bit of a delay, there was this huge vacuum. It was huge. I mean, I would kind of wander around my house, and it was a whole process, kind of like you talked about when Kelly left, of redefining. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't have kids at home. I'm not the mayor. What do you do? What are you going to do with your time? And it was. I'm going to say really honestly, it was very difficult. Very difficult times. I mean, my husband was happy, but it's like I didn't envision myself 40 hours a day. What'd you do today? Well, I mopped some floors and I vacuumed my new carpet and, you know, just there's more. And so it was tough. But in the meantime, I was already doing some volunteer work and now I was able to expand that and get a little more involved in some of the things I'm really interested in. And I'm a much better friend. Yeah. I'm able to spend time with friends I couldn't dedicate and be a good friend to.
And isn't that interesting?
Great. Yes.
Because I had to bring you here to see you.
Yes.
Because our lives still are busy, but I agree there is more time to reconnect with friends. And I noticed in some of the research about dealing with the empty nest, they call it a syndrome, but this is the empty nest period of time, that we actually can reconnect with childhood friends as if no time has passed and pick up and really nurture those deeper relationships, because the years that we're raising children, it's a whole different friend or social group. Mm-hmm. You end up being friends with your kids' parents' friends and it kind of takes you away. So that's one of the things I've discovered is mm-hmm. kind of this reconnecting on a really deep level, because now my friends that I knew, you know, when I was younger, we have that history together, but now we have the whole stories of our years raising children, but not together
right.
and how that influenced us.
And there are so many opportunities in this community for people to volunteer their time. If you sew, if you knit, if you quilt, if you could tutor AVID students, I just saw that recently, hospice, it runs the gamut. If you like animals, if you like sea life, if you like plants, if you like hiking, there are so many opportunities to get involved. If you're feeling isolated, you can use your skills, you can meet new people, and it really can help you begin to evolve into a different sense of purpose and help you redefine what you're doing. I would really encourage that.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Shelley Higginbotham, and we are talking about the empty nest, refeathering the empty nest. And I introduced kind of the feeling of the empty nest syndrome that can be, you know, fraught with loneliness and grief and a sense of loss of identity. And it can be a few months long, a few weeks, it can be a few years. You know, it depends on kind of how your life unfolds in front of you. But there also can be this refeathering that becomes glorious, where you realize you have 30 more years, you know, however much time you have post raising children, to enjoy your relationship with your children as young adults and adults, the grandparenting piece. And in all honesty, I don't know if I completely emerged, you know, and was fine and ready to move forward. I think that becoming a grandmother in the midst of all that delayed a little bit. It gave this kind of this new sense of life goes on, life goes forward, and that redefining of who I am in the world, but still having connections to little people, to my people. So that helped. So just like we kind of emerge into this new spot. And it's interesting because you talked about all the opportunities to volunteer and get involved. But I think until you get to the place where you're okay with the fact that things have changed, it's hard. I just think it's hard to reach out, because I just remember wondering why I was struggling so much, because I had so many good things going on and so much activity in my life, and that didn't protect me from having to actually go through the existential crisis.
That's a good point.
Of change. So we'd love to hear from you. How has your refeathering been? Are you in the midst of the refeathering? Are you trying to figure out what your next move is or what is going to happen on the horizon? Are you winding down a career? Have your kids left home? Or have you already moved past that and found yourself in that next space? Eric Erickson talked about in our adult development that you hit that young old stage post midlife, and you have two ways you're going to go. You're either going to regenerate or you're going to stagnate. And it is a period of developmental change that we all go through in some form. So where are you with this? Are you regenerating yourself? Are you generating a new sense of identity? Or do you feel like you're stagnant? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls.
There's a couple of these.
Nothing like a little Jerry Garcia to spice up a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And my guest is Shelley Higginbotham, former mayor of Pismo Beach, mother of three, and volunteer extraordinaire. And
nice.
Yes, newly committed friend.
Yes.
And then, according to her husband, fabulous wife. Which is, those are a lot of great roles to play in the world. And going into the break, I talked about kind of that transition period that we have to give ourselves time. You know, if you're in this space where you found that your career has been winding down and you're leaving a job that you loved and it gave you meaning, and or your time raising kids has changed, you can't just jump into the next thing. It's kind of like a rebound relationship. It's not really going to work until you're feeling it. And so I think allowing ourselves to feel that loss, you mentioned kind of that sense of that hole that you mm-hmm. felt, and that you can't force it. You can't make it fill up by doing a lot of other busy things. You can stay busy by walking your hill or hanging out with friends, but the actual healing of a sense of emptiness happens in its own time.
Right.
And then, as you said, there's that moment where you wake up and you realize, oh, that's better. And part of the work is not expecting the hole to heal up right away or to get over the grief or to, you know, and you also don't want to just sit home and wallow in those feelings as well. Even though you have to honor the grief and the sense of loss, you don't want to really just allow yourself to wallow in it. You need to be taking steps out, you know, trying out different activities or meeting new friends or trying volunteering. And they may or may not hit you. They may not, you know, fill that hole, but they're kind of there and they're keeping you active. And if you do both things, if you honor the grief, if you allow yourself to feel the feelings of loss and really experience that sense of change, and you keep doing your work, exercising, eating well, going out and doing things, at some point you do wake up and you're kind of there. And you had talked right. about some research on transition and change that...
Yeah, I had the opportunity to work with Ken Hampion. He was the extraordinary former city manager for the city of San Luis Obispo. And he had, in anticipation of my void in life.
He knew something you didn't know.
He did. He gave me some great handouts. And so there's one handout sheet that was quotes and thoughts that rang out to me from Ken Hampion. And it was about transition and change. And he said, a life transition, as opposed to life chapter, is the dismantling of a role, a storyline, in order to shed, transition, and discover again, which I thought is really good. And ending a life cycle with dignity and care requires an ability to say farewell with gratitude mm-hmm. and clarity, and then leaving you the freedom to consider your next options.
And I wonder...
That speaks a lot.
I think it does. And I wonder if... Part of the work then is accepting that almost that death of the life you used to have, because until you let go, you can't walk into anything new. You're kind of trying to hang on. And there's, I can't remember which developmental psychologist said it, but they talked about that transition of life is going from one solid landmass to another, and that you have to navigate that distance between the two landmasses. And in order to get there, you have to let go of mm-hmm. the known space, and you're either going to tread through calm waters to get to the new place, or you're going to feel like you're drowning, but you have to make the journey.
Mm-hmm. And I liked looking back at the one comment was saying farewell with gratitude, mm-hmm. because if you look at any transition in life, some transitions, we can say, hey, thank you for the opportunity. I feel so grateful to have raised three extraordinary children. I feel so grateful to have had the opportunity to be a public servant. I wouldn't have changed any of that for anything. And now it's time to redefine that,
yeah.
whatever that is.
And then add one more piece. I am grateful to be making it into my young old years.
Right.
Because there has to be some grace in moving forward in accepting that we're not going to start over again with a new career or with children. I mean, that's part of that acceptance, is that moving into this young old state is really powerful. Our number is 805-781-3875. Shelley and I would love to hear your experience with the refeathering of the nest. We know our path, but I wonder how this was for you. Did you move gracefully from one landmass to the other? Did you feel like you were drowning? Have you found something to fill that space for you post, whether it was career or child rearing? 805-781-3875. Hi, Becca, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, my name is Becca Alexander, and I'm a supervisor at the Family Care Network. We're Hi. A community-based organization, and I called in because I am in charge of foster parent recruitment. And I felt like it was a fit for what you were talking about, because we are looking for families that are kind of ready to switch gears or ready for a completely different challenge, and families that have had really good parenting experience and they loved that part of their lives, and maybe they're willing to use it in a totally new way now that some of the things in their lives have shifted and their family system has shifted.
And I'm so glad you called in, Becca, because that was one of the things I was thinking about, is where do mothers and fathers who are filled with love and the joy of raising children put all that love and joy? Because maybe it won't be enough for them to volunteer at the, you know, Humane Society or for the botanical gardens. They really are about nurturing children.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's just one component of so many things people can do. But I agree, a lot of times people think, well, I could go be a mentor, I could do, go do this. But there's an opportunity to even welcome kids into your home, especially if you really had that love of parenting and you have like a, you know, a support network or a greater network of friends and family, like you were talking about, like you're connected and you're like, what else can I do? This is such a service to our kids, but also to our greater community, because we're always looking for foster parents. It's just a chronic deficit we have across the country, but even here in SLO County. So I was just wanted to bring that up as an option for people, because we are particularly looking for families where there's a parent at home and parents that have experience are willing to foster teens, which is like a big area that, you know, when you have families of young kids, that's not the best fit.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a great phone call. I'm so glad you called in to share that opportunity.
And as a reminder that there is always places to put our love.
Always.
And, it's also, I'm glad you called, because our friend Maggie Summers is a foster parent. And she's inspired me to want to spread that opportunity around and let people know that that's available. Because I think that she went through kind of the searching for what that next thing would be for herself and landed in this place. And it's changed her life or maybe reawakened her life.
And probably change some kids' lives in the process.
Absolutely. Right? So, Becca, if people are interested in getting information, how do they contact you?
Well, they can look online at the Family Care Network, and they can also call in at 805-781-3535.
Wonderful. Becca, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
So there are many paths.
There are many paths. I'm too old. Sorry, Becca.
Well, and so that's an interesting thing, because here is an opportunity in our lives where post-children, post-career, you really get to say, this is who I am at this time, especially for women. And I hate to be too gender specific, but when you look at the developmental cycle of women's lives and men's lives, if you're like traditionally have were raised as a woman in our society, from a young age, we're kind of taught to take that caretaking role. Mm-hmm. We do babysitting for our siblings. We do babysitting in our neighborhoods. You know, we're taught those homemaking skills. And it's changing. But for our generation, it was still very traditional. The expectation was that we would grow up and get married and raise children. But then developmentally for women, once our children are gone, it opens this whole opportunity for the first time in women's lives where they get to step back and say, oh, and then what do I think? Or what do I feel? Or what do I believe? Or what do I want to experience? And it happens, you know, at 45, 50 years old, and that can be life-changing. And I think of the women who've gone on to write books and start movements and create nonprofits who are in their 50s. They choose, you know, they bring into their lives another way to birth and raise something other than children.
And I think it's okay also for women, once they transition into the empty nest, to not have to write a book or rediscover, that they can actually rediscover themselves and say, I'm going to have some me time. And wow, I'm going to sit down and actually read a novel uninterrupted. Or these are books I've been wanting to read. Or I'm going to try to learn a new language. Or I'm going to try my hand at drawing. Or just take care of themselves. I'm going to exercise.
Be.
Yeah,
just be.
Mm-hmm. Just be. Just discover themselves, too.
I'm glad you said that, because there is this, and I jumped to it, too, this idea that our whole society is based on doing, doing, doing.
Yep.
What's the next thing? What's the next thing? And, you know, I even had that in my notes. What's the next thing? What do we do after that? And there doesn't have to be a grandiose thing to have a really satisfying.
I want to share just a funny story. So when I was mayor and we would be at these social things, it's not a paid full-time job in small cities. And I'd be in a group of people and they'd say, oh, okay, so what do you do when you're not mayor? And I said, oh, I'm a stay-at-home mom. Conversation killer. Boom. People would walk away. They go, oh, how nice. And then they would turn and talk to somebody else because...
How could you talk
about anything else of any value? And I was like, oh, how disappointing. Because that is so valuable. I don't want to get on my Dr. Laura mantra, but definitely there's a lot to say about that.
And it's interesting because it's not socially popular and it's also not economically viable for a lot of people, which makes it a really challenging conversation because you and I both said we had the privilege of getting to stay home because I think we're both aware that for a lot of women who would like to stay home economically, it's not in the cards. And so there's kind of this these dual forces. One force saying, I would never stay home full time with kids. I want to have my career. And there's a lot of women said, I would love to stay home, but economically I can't.
Right.
And so that makes it a challenge for anyone to kind of find that path or that place where they really can feel good and not feel judged or not feel like they've let themselves or society down.
Right.
I think I've told the story before, but in my family psychology class, I talk about, you know, all the different ways we make family, and that for the first time actually since the late 70s, there's been a slight uptick in the amount of women staying home full time. Not a huge turn, but it's a turn up for the first time. And across the board, a lot of my students will say one of two things. One, I would love to stay home, but I would get judged or I would feel like I was wasting my education.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel like, well, how could that be a waste of your education if you're raising another human? Because you would want someone with the highest education.
Mm-hmm. And one of the benefits I had because I was able to stay home, is a lot of the kids would come that didn't have people at home, and you could be the house. So you mm-hmm. could make sure homework got done, or you could make sure there was snack. And so that was also, I think, fulfilling a really important role for some of these kids' lives as well. They didn't have to go home to an empty house.
Right.
And that feels really good, especially when they come home to my house as grown-ups, and you see how great they're doing.
Clearly, we enjoyed the full nest experience.
Yes.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Shelley Higginbotham. We're talking about the empty nest, although we keep jumping back into our nest. But I brought you in today to talk about that refeathering, that next part and that next piece of creating a life that feels meaningful and full in those same rich ways that raising our families did. And also, as I mentioned earlier, my mom was done and very happy for us to be launched and, you know, had a lot of things she wanted to do, learning to paint, learning to speak Spanish, you know, spending time traveling, being with my father. So how has your empty nest or refeathering been? We love your part of the conversation, 805-781-3875. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, 805-781-3875. So let's talk about the winding down, because unless your husband is going to just work until his hundreds.
Probably.
Okay.
No. He takes Mondays off now, so he calls himself semi-retired.
One day
yes.
off. So what do you talk about that as a couple, though?
Yes.
Is there a next act? What is that?
Well, I think the discussion at this point, I mean, we're planning some travels. I think the discussion at this point is, where do we go? Do we stay in this area? Do we move to a smaller space? Because I don't think grandchildren are on the horizon for many, many years. Darn it. So that's part of the discussion. Where do we want to live? And what would that environment be like? As you get older, you start looking at, oh my gosh, do you have to step into your shower? Oh my gosh, there's a lot of stairs. Holy smokes, you know, this is a lot of upkeep on a house for two people, and you begin to start that kind of dialogue. So that's where we're thinking. I mean, we were planning a trip, and we said, you know what? None of our friends snow ski anymore.
Yeah.
Our trips, we're going to have to take up fishing or hiking or something.
So you honor all the years that your knees allowed you to snow ski?
Right. And then, so that's how you start to plan that as you physically get older, and then as he will at some point have, you know, more free time and he's taking more time, it's great. And that's going to be a whole other new discussion. And well, it won't be a puppy, Tyler.
There will be no puppies.
No puppies.
Well, and that re-feathering, you know, we talked about one, allowing the loneliness and grief to kind of work its way through and honoring that you have lived this amazing piece of your life, but then kind of moving forward, putting that toe out in front of you. And what does that look like for your relationships? There's a spike in the amount of divorces that happen in a couple times in marriage opportunities where divorce becomes a potential. Not surprisingly or surprisingly is early when the children are young, toddler.
Yeah, not surprising.
Yes, because it's physically demanding. If someone's at home, you know, doing primary care, or even if both people are working full time, still one person tends to be the primary care. So that puts a lot of strain on young marriages. And then there's a spike again, right post children leaving home. And if couples haven't really done that work to solidify that strong base, you know, maintained that relationship, the kids are gone and you look at each other and you say, do I know you?
Right.
Or do I like you anymore? And that can be really disconcerting. And so that can add to that sense of loneliness that, you know, sometimes the loneliest place is in a marriage.
Sure.
If you're not connecting with your spouse. So I mean, what are some things that we can do to either reignite that, you know, spark that renewal?
Well, find those things that brought you together to begin with. You forget, as you say, you get caught up in the crazy chaos, wonderful chaos of raising children or building your careers and all of that building, and then you reach that point. What brought you two together in the first place? And build on that again. You both have invested all this time, the best years that you have, and now how will that look going forward, and what can you enjoy together still?
Yeah,
and rediscover.
You know, Chris and I talk a lot about just kind of living four or five different lives, because we've lived this part of our life here on the Central Coast for 30 plus years, and Chris went to school here and I went to school in Santa Barbara, so it's been, our adult life has been here. And so I think we have this kind of antsy fantasy feeling that we'd like to live, you know, a year in Chicago and a year maybe in Alaska, and just do and keep our place here if we could, but to do these five different lives, because it became really apparent to me how short the front end of our life is, you know, that we don't know. I mean, we'd love to have 30 more years, but we don't know. So feeling like we wanted to kind of have these life experiences together to just build on our story. And then there's that kind of strange pull, not strange, but then there's the pull because we have a 3-year-old granddaughter and not wanting to miss any of that. And so we find ourselves tied between, again, these two forces, one of wanting to stay engaged in the lives of our children, but also having this curiosity of what can we make of our life together? That feeling you have when you first get married and it's all possibility.
Right.
You know, you have no constraints. You start your practice. Where do we want to live? Where will that house be? You're all building. And I think part of the grief of the end of that time of your life is that it feels like all of that newness is over. But in reality, with some courage, and I don't know if we're quite at the courage place yet, but with some courage, there we are at a place where all bets are off. You know, anything can happen. We can reinvent ourselves if we're willing to take some chances or take some risks. And it's hard not to be a little risk averse at this age.
Sure. And it's rediscovering. We climbed Madonna Mountain, which we've done.
San Luis Mountain.
Oh, sorry. San Luis Mountain. Sierra San Luis. Thank you. Jeez. I've lived here since 1979. I've climbed it a number of times, but I never made it to the M, and only by chance we took a wrong turn and hit the M. Oh my
gosh. I didn't know there was a path out to that.
Well, we found one.
Oh, they're good for you.
Take my picture. Holy smokes. And that was a whole new thing. As I was telling you earlier, we made a pact. We're going to discover a new place once a month now. We went to a matinee the other day.
Good for you.
Yes, and there's only like 10 people in there. You can sit wherever you want.
But it's true. You don't have to sell your house. You don't have to move far away. We're kind of looking at the big things, but it is just right here, something different.
That can just reignite that you didn't know was here.
Yeah, ruts are easy to fall into.
Yeah, we can get way past Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune every night. I know it.
That's so funny that you would say that, because I think it must be a generational thing.
I think so.
So you talked about kind of that void post mayoral work, mm-hmm. and kind of finding your way into some volunteering. But do you feel that there's another calling coming your way professionally, or do you feel like are going to be a professional?
You know, I just we have a guest house that we built right after our kids all left, right, of course, that we were hoping relatives would be a great place for relatives to stay. And so I just started listing that on a Airbnb. So that's kind of a whole new experience for me. I've only had two people that rented it, but I like meeting new people, and it does take a little bit of time.
You're an innkeeper.
I'm an innkeeper. So that's something new, keeping me occupied. I'm not sure. Everybody in my family speaks Spanish fluently, so I'm trying to catch up with them. But no, I know there's something. I'm very passionate about affordable housing. I just have to throw that out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm privileged to be working with People's Self-Help Housing on their board. And I feel very drawn in that direction. And I don't know what that means, but it's essential that we house people.
So you can feel that there's a light that you're moving towards, or some calling, you're just not sure how. And how has your relationship with your children changed now that they're out of the house and adulting?
They're so smart. Oh my,
surprised.
Well, I knew they were smart, but I feel like I have to just catch up on every blog, and I have to change the way I cook because nobody's eating carbs right now. Just the conversations are sometimes exhausting because they are so smart and so interested in so many things that I'm amazed. And they come up with people I've never heard of. I figured, we're all educated. Their dad and I are educated, but I don't have a clue sometimes what they're talking about. So I'm getting out my thesaurus, or I'm getting it out, who's this person, and Googling it. So that's fascinating to me. And that's what's going to keep us younger and on our toes, because we want to keep up with them and be able to converse with them as well. But it makes me feel really proud, too, that they are engaged in their lives and in society and care about the world.
And it's interesting because you talk about your relationship with your adult children, and clearly there's a lot of love and connection and continuity in the relationship. And I get, emails quite often from parents that haven't had that experience with their adult children, that once they've left home, they've become separate, or they've had falling outs. And I think that that's can also influence kind of that emptiness feeling, and why we would hang on or maybe grieve that loss. Because if you there is kind of that art to transitioning that relationship with your children. There's one thing to let them go, to launch them in as mm-hmm. young adults, but then to really be able to honor the choices and decisions they make moving into adulthood and buying homes and getting careers and maybe not aligning with the values and beliefs that you raise them with.
Don't get me wrong. It hasn't been all smooth sailing. Trust me. We've had our ups and downs. But the one thing I have to say is nobody is afraid to speak their mind or their feelings when they're at the house. Sometimes it's pretty loud. Mm-hmm. But there's always a discussion, and everybody's willing to continue those discussions. We were all just together this weekend, and it was really fun. But again, it wasn't without some ups and downs in conversations, because I have three pretty strong children, and of all of us, and my daughter's married, and her husband has opinions, and sometimes they're a little different from the others. But everybody feels free to share them.
And I think that's important to talk about, because if we just looked at people's Facebook page or their Instagram page, you just see the ideal curated photos of families doing well, or our Christmas cards that everyone just sent out. Not that I'm suggesting that we would send out our family in distress Christmas cards, but I think, to be honest about that too, because the transition in, from raising children, having them home, to being with adult children includes bringing in son-in-laws and daughter-in-laws, and that is a whole different experience and world to navigate. And they come in with their family experiences and then their expectations. You know, my daughter and her husband, and now their daughter, they have a whole life plan and scheme that's unique to them, and I want them to have that. But then there's part of me that doesn't want to be left out. You know, it's all those dancing emotions all the time. I still want to be the most important place in their life, but I also want them to have their own life completely. And so to dance with those two feelings is challenging. And
it is.
And how to get through conflict and hard feelings if you completely disagree with your adult children, and the fear of maybe alienating them. And then how do we swallow pride and call and say, you know what, I'm wrong on this one.
Right, right. And but what a gift, because when you call them and say, I'm wrong on this one, then we don't want to say we're still parenting, but we're always parents. Then you're showing them how they can come back and do the same thing with each other or with you or with someone else in their life and admit, hey, I could have done this differently. I could have expressed myself differently. Because that's the best thing we can give our kids, right? Our adult children.
I think there is a lot of it, you know, the saying growing old isn't for sissies, because everything gets a lot more complex. When we were just parenting our children, we were in charge. We got to, you know, define how things operate as a family. But once we've raised them, if we've raised them well, they're free and independent thinkers, which we want them to be. But that also means we are doing a lot of stepping back, letting go, having patience, accepting change.
We're always their parents, but we can't really parent them anymore. We can't, oh, it's cold outside, put that sweater on.
Oh, I still will say that, but then now they'll ignore me.
Yeah. Right, because they're off living on their own and they're figuring out how to stay fed.
Feathering their nest. Shelley Higginbotham, thank you for being my guest today. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You will find previous shows at kcbx.org. Send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow us on Instagram and be a part of the conversation in any way you feel fit. We look forward to continuing this conversation next Tuesday at 2. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX.
Well, it's all someone to tell you everything. Sit around and wonder what tomorrow will bring. Maybe a diamond ring. Well, it's all right, even if they say you're wrong. Well, it's all right. Sometimes you gotta be strong. Well, it's all right, as long as you got somewhere to lay. Somewhere down the road when somebody plays at the end of the line, purple haze. Well, it's all right, even when push comes to shove. Well, it's all right, if you got someone to love. Well, it's all right, everything will work out fine. Well, it's all right, we're going to the end of the line. Ashamed of the car I drive.
The end of the line.
I'm just glad to be here, happy to feel that.
At the end of the line, of the line.
And it don't matter if you're by my side.
At the end of the line,
I'm satisfied.
Well, it's all.